You're too damn white, guys.
Welcome back to another Too Damn White Guys. I'm Julian Smith.
I'm Andrew Rader.
And today we've picked some really light material for a conversation. We're going to be talking about the Israeli-Palestinian conflict.
Yeah, we're not afraid to talk about controversial subjects.
Yeah, just leave it to Two Damn White Guys to pick the most delicate, candy-like conversation here. The reason we want to do this is because it's an ongoing story that's playing out in history. It's been going on for a while, but not as long as most people think. One of the main misconceptions we're going to spend time talking about today is how this is actually a relatively new conflict. Right, Andrew?
It is, yeah. And to be clear, we're not taking sides in any way. We're not passing judgment on, you know, anything really. We're just trying to talk about what the roots are, talk about the history of it, talk about what is actually going on, because I think people hear about it a lot. Actually, it's still, you know, a big story in the news. It impacts our world. People don't necessarily know the background, so it's kind of like a history of it and just what is going on and that sort of thing. Just sort of a bit of like background education. We're not experts in it, so we may get some things wrong, and apologies. I know people may have strong feelings about it, so we're going to try to be pretty even-handed and just kind of present the facts. And, you know, we're going to try not to be controversial about a controversial subject.
Yeah, we're going to be looking at this through the lens of history, through what we know has happened and is happening. And I think, you know, one interesting thing that people get wrong about this conflict is that it's all about religion. People think this is all about Judaism versus Islam, and that's the basis of this conflict. But it's really not, because Islam is a pretty new religion. It's newer than Christianity, right? Isn't it? It's
632.
Okay. It's newer. By like 300 years.
But the Israeli-Palestinian conflict is far, far more recent than that. So
Islam's but I'm just saying there's no way it could just be about religion.
Right. Well, I mean, so it's tough to separate. Let's say that, because obviously, if everyone was kind of the same and there was no, it is a bit of a tribal conflict in a sense that there's sides and stuff like that. But yeah, it's partly religion, partly nation states, partly territorial. I mean, it's kind of all territorial in a sense. But what divides people? Cultural. I mean, there's lots of different things that sort of divide people. I think it's hard to say that religion is not a major factor, because if everyone was like the same in some sense, that from a religious standpoint, then I think the conflict probably would not exist. But that's kind of also like maybe people would find something else to fight about, or, you know, it's kind
of, I just think religion makes it easier to get what you want by force. If you're going to, I'm not saying specifically in this Israeli-Palestinian conflict that religion is the central conflict, but I think that if you want land and another people occupy that land, it makes it a hell of a lot easier to feel good about wiping them out if they're going to hell and you're not.
Maybe, but I mean, I guess the religion to some extent allows people to take sides. It makes it easier to take sides. It's one aspect that, you know, identifies you and your fellow allies or compatriots, right? Like, there's obviously citizenship and things like that. I mean, there's a lot of Arabic people living in Israel. There's Muslims in Israel. They're a minority, but there's some serving in the Israeli army. So it's certainly not like, you know, completely black and white, one versus the other.
One quick fun fact before we dive into Andrew telling me the news is that, and I just learned this, Andrew enlightened me to the fact that the word Palestine is related to the word Philistine, which is everywhere throughout the Old Testament, which is maybe a reason people think that this conflict is about religion. Maybe, I don't know. But, you know, like you were saying, Andrew, it's not like it's actually the same people, the Philistine-Palestine thing.
Oh, right.
Well, you want to tell me some news? You want to tell me the news this week?
Yeah, so news.
Andrew tells Julian the news.
A woman in Houston has gone through 6 hours of surgery to make herself look more like Meghan Markle.
Okay, so I don't know who Meghan Markle is.
She married Prince Harry. She just had a baby. She's
You're going to have to give me more news than this.
She's one of the royal family. Man, you really don't read the tabloids, do you?
I don't read shit. every week you think I'm joking.
That's good. That's a really good thing to admit on an educational podcast.
No, I don't read the news. I read books and I read, I actually do read some news, but it's so hard. It's so hard to know what news is real nowadays. Mm-hmm. It's so hard to, you know, I mean, you can pick good sources. You know, there's good sources like PBS NewsHour and I think like The Guardian is pretty good. But I just don't, I don't know. Maybe it's because I don't, I got to get a good news feed. I got to get a good news feed. Some good sources in there. What's yours? What's your news secret?
Oh, well, mostly I watch PBS NewsHour, which is, pretty good, I think. Yeah, they interview both sides usually. It's funny because, you know, the rule of journalism is to always tell both sides of the story. But it's, for some stories, that actually is not a good strategy, like for climate change or something like that, because that implies that you should give equal time to climate change deniers, which is not really true. It's the same thing as, like, evolution. There's not really two sides of that. It's just kind of, like, what's real and what's not real. So I guess sometimes the journalism always tell both sides of the story results in giving equal time to both true things and untrue things, which is, you know, one of the reasons why it's problematic. But
well, we did do an episode on Santa Claus. So
yeah,
we're in the exercise of professional journalism here on Two Damn White Guys.
What, Santa Claus is real?
You're a grown man who still believes in Santa Claus. I pity your children.
Yeah. my daughter probably doesn't yet, so she's too young to believe in Santa Claus.
Yeah.
A Florida man was charged with a DUI for crashing his lawnmower into a police car.
How does one crash a lawnmower into a police car?
Well, it's one of those ones you ride on, right? And then the police car was parked.
Can you get a DUI for drinking a beer on a lawnmower in your own yard?
Yes, this is what I'm saying. It happened.
Oh my God. Don't drink and mow.
And a Georgia woman brought home a case of Lego for her kid from a consignment store. And when the kid opened it, they found not Lego, but $20,000 worth of methamphetamines.
Oh my God. Wait, where did she get the Legos? And you just said you just used Lego for plural of Lego.
It is Lego. Some people say Legos, but I think that's wrong.
What makes you think this is wrong?
Well, so Lego is Danish, and I believe that pluralization of Danish does not use an S at the end. I could be wrong about that, but I would imagine it uses like an E or umlaut or something like that. So Lego, and you would slightly change the pronunciation. But my Danish is not very good, so I'm not entirely certain. Actually, Danish is like one of the hardest languages, and apparently it's disappearing. And Norwegians make fun of how they all swallow the words. And there's like, you can find some YouTube videos about Norwegians making fun of Danish and how they don't even understand themselves. They don't understand each other. So,
This is kind of like how Toyota wants you to call the Prius Prii in plural form.
But really? Interesting. Yeah. Yeah, it kind of makes sense.
But I think it's kind of campy to call it Prii. You're just going to sound like a tool bag if you say Prii.
Well, it only makes sense if it's Latin. I guess Prius is probably Latin, so then it probably makes sense. But of course, the argument is if you're anglicizing the word, so you're making it an English word, then you would
this
say
is America.
Priuses. So it's reasonable to say Priuses, too, even if the root is Latin, because you're speaking English, damn it.
We're pretty good in America about adding syllables to words, especially in the South.
Yeah.
So was that the news? Was that the most interesting things that happened?
Those are the only things that happened.
I love how the news segment on Two Damn White Guys has just deteriorated into like the most absurd news stories. we're like the onion of news now.
I figure that people get their news from somewhere else. So
everybody gets their actual news elsewhere. These are just some bonuses we're throwing in just so you don't, I don't know. We're trying to give you some variety. All right.
Yeah.
Give us a break. All right. So let's jump back to Israel and Palestine, shall we?
Yep. All right. Sounds good. So what do you know about Israel and Palestine? And like, I'm curious what the casual person thinks, because obviously, you know, we hear about it on the news. One of the things that happened on the news recently was that President Trump said that he would officially recognize Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. This is something that I think Israel has insisted on for maybe 30 or more years. But it's controversial because Jerusalem is basically an occupied city. So in its kind of split, East Jerusalem, West Jerusalem. And so it's internationally not clear what the status of Jerusalem is. And this is kind of the same thing with the status of Palestine in general. Palestine is in some ways a country. It's what's called a de jure country, like so a country by law, which means a lot of countries in the world recognize Palestine as actually being a country. There's something called the Palestinian Authority, which basically controls internal affairs and actually issues passports and things like that, which say the state of Palestine. But a lot of countries, Israel I think included, don't really recognize it as an official state.
Let's slow down a little bit, because I feel like we may be overloading the listeners right out of the gate. I think this is all good, but I think we should maybe start with let's start with me answering your question, because that's a natural place to start. Yeah. I don't know very much, so I'm gonna have a lot of questions. I think you're gonna have a lot better grasp on this topic than I do, because you're a big history buff. I'm also a pretty big history buff, but you know way more than I do. So there will be lots of questions from me. What I think I can add to this is I know a lot about ancient Israeli culture, and this is not the basis of the conflict, but I do think modern day, what is now modern Israel, has been a really conflicted region since the beginning of civilization in general, because, you know, Israel wanted it and it wasn't Israel's first. It was, who was there before the Israelites? It was the Canaanites. Mm. They had to go out and conquer the Canaanites before they got to their promised land. So it was, you know, that whole area, you know, it was Israel really wanted it. They got it, they conquered. And then they were driven out by the Babylonians. They were driven out by the Persians, and they kept getting, you know, kicked out of this land that, you know, their God Yahweh had supposedly given to them. Mm-hmm. And so I think that while this modern conflict isn't a result of that original conflict, like 4,000 years ago or however long that was, it seems like that general pocket of area right there where Israel is just a really desirable place. And a lot of people have wanted it over a long period of time. And it does seem like the conflict is basically about land.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, so it is. The modern conflict is certainly about land. Obviously, there's a hefty dose of religion mixed in, because Jerusalem is like the holy site claimed by all three major Abrahamic religions. So Judaism, right, Islam, and Christianity all claim this is like their, you know,
it's their promised land.
Yeah. Well, I would say not for the Christians' promised land, but yeah, I mean, for the Jews, that's sort of the phrase that would be used. Yeah.
You're right that the Christians don't have like a, you know, they don't have God's promise, quote, to the land. But Abraham's children, Isaac and Ishmael, were both kind of, I guess, entitled to this promise because they were both sons of Abraham. And Abraham, you know, was promised the land by his God. So I think that definitely in the Muslim and Judaistic line, there's promises to that specific pocket of land. And I think that's definitely fueling it a little bit, but it's not the main basis of it.
The modern one, I think, is relatively distinct from that, although it is true that like the Jewish claim comes from, you know, some of the original supposed promises. So it depends on how... the other thing is, within the groups, within Palestinians, within Israelis, there's not one unified position either. Like some believe in a two-state solution, and some kind of are hardliners who think that the other one should just leave, basically. There's not kind of one obvious solution on either side is the other problem. So it's pretty intransigent, and that's why nothing has really happened for about 70 years. In terms of resolution.
Maybe if Abraham hadn't have slept around so much, there wouldn't be so many children on like different bloodlines claiming it's their land.
So it's true that I guess Judaism comes from sort of like inheritance or whatever. I mean, there doesn't seem to be a lot of like proselytizing. In fact, I'm only aware of one group in history who actually converted to Judaism. I can't remember who they were, but they were in Asia Minor in Turkey. It's kind of unusual. But Christianity and Islam, unlike Judaism, are basically all about the proselytizing, so converting other people.
Mm.
And so it's not tied to any particular land in the same way, because it's they claim to be universal religions, which means that they should go out and convert everyone, basically. That's kind of the whole
thing. Their land is the people.
Right. I guess, yeah, you could kind of say that. At least their power derives from, like, you know, converting as many people. So they're not tied to any particular location. They're definitely right. Universal. And so, I mean, I think from the Palestinian side, it's basically like we were living here kind of thing. It's not like mm-hmm. a religious thing from that standpoint. But so maybe from a Palestinian standpoint, I think it is much more territorial. Obviously, there are religious influences and religious hardliners and stuff like that as well. But I think from the Palestinian side, it's far more territorial. But basically, we're talking about like the banishments from Judea of the Jews, basically. And the main one was actually the Roman one. There was a revolt, King Herod, and then there was mm-hmm. a revolt against him. He was kind of a Roman puppet. And then there was like this fortress of Masada in around 78 or something like that, AD. So I think it might have been after Augustus. But shortly after Augustus, towards the end of the first century, basically that was the diaspora, because that's when the Jews sort of fled Judea and kind of went throughout. And so for most of history, they didn't.
And they went back to Israel at that point, right?
Well, no. So that's the whole thing. And that's why
that was later.
Throughout history, they were living kind of all over. They were living mm-hmm. like in Russia. They were living in Europe. They were living in.
They were spread all out. But then there was a point in time where they came back. Empire.
Well, yeah, but that's very recent. That's what I'm saying. Right. Is right. Until the end of the First World War. Actually, even in the late 1800s, there was this big Zionist movement. It was even called to go back to the Promised Land, right? And so Jews started immigrating in large numbers to the region. Like 100 years ago, not, you know,
okay. so pretty recent.
So the diaspora, when they got all spread out by the Romans, was basically like 2000 years ago. And only about 100 years ago did they really start coming back in large numbers, maybe 120 in some cases. But it was massively accelerated by the Second World War and the Holocaust and things like that. The survivors fled to Israel in large numbers. And in the 30s, you know, with the rise of Hitler, a lot of Jews fled Europe for safety, mm-hmm. and a lot of them chose to go to Israel. So really the Jewish population of the region really went up massively throughout the 20th century, the first half of the 20th century especially. So it's kind of like they were sort of newcomers to the region, even though they have this ancient claim supposedly to the region. Basically, and the thing is, on the other side, the Palestinians didn't really have a concept of statehood at the time, because being under the Ottoman Empire for like 400 years, the region Palestine was basically considered a region of Greater Syria, and it's unclear. Like, there was kind of no such thing as a country of Palestine at the time, right? And so it's just the identity that was assumed by the people who lived there. Right. So
right.
they said, well,
they didn't have rights here, so. Necessarily, but they just occupied that area and they didn't really have their own nation.
Well, no, it's not about rights. They were the people who lived there, but they were subjects of the Ottoman Empire. There was no such thing as a country at the time. It was just they were subjects of the Ottoman Empire. Right. They were part of the Ottoman province of Syria, but there was no country per se. Right. And then at the end of the First World War, the Ottoman Empire basically collapsed and the British occupied the region. They had a campaign against the Ottoman Empire in 1917. And at the Treaty of Versailles, they were awarded the Mandate of Palestine. So the British were kind of like looking over the region, kind of trying to administering the region, right? And the boundaries of the Middle East were basically created at the end of the First World War, pretty arbitrarily. So the lines between Syria, the lines between Lebanon and Palestine and Mesopotamia at the time, which is Iraq, were basically just drawn by British and French diplomats and generals. So there's like the Sykes-Picot Agreement, which was an agreement by the French and British to split the Middle East along particular lines. So they just kind of like drew lines on the map. And that's what ended up being Palestine, right? So it was just kind of this arbitrary decision by the... So it's not like there was like a country of Palestine. It was just like arbitrary.
And what year is this that you're at right now?
1917 is when the British arrived, but it was split up in 1919, 1920.
So this is the point where Israel and Palestine, and you really got to look at a map to understand it.
There was no Israel at the time either.
Right, yeah, because it wasn't founded as a state till 1948. But, it's tricky because Israel has existed as a place and a group of people for, millennia, but it wasn't really recognized as a state until 1948.
Not really, no. From a geographical standpoint, I suppose the words Palestine and Israel are somewhat interchangeable. So, but not really. I mean, there was...
I'm talking about in the sense of like when you read the Bible, Abraham changes his name to Israel because that's going to be the name of his land and they settle there and, they don't get to stay. They're kicked out by tons of different countries over the course of several centuries. But they, I think what's interesting about that specific piece of land is that it's the cradle of complex society, arguably, like the Mesopotamian region. I mean, I know there was India and China that were technically first, but a lot of historians consider that part of the world to be the cradle of civilization. And I think that maybe it's because there were so many different groups of people fighting over that area. Maybe it was just like a great place to grow food or something. I don't know. But yeah, for some reason, everybody wanted to live there.
It was adjacent to the Fertile Crescent. And you're right. The Fertile Crescent, as its name implies, was a great place to grow food, specifically cereal grains. It's where wheat basically came from because it was dry enough to be good for grass, which is what humans eat. Humans eat grass, basically wheat and barley and rice. Almost everything we eat, like 80% of our calories come from grass. So humans thrive in grasslands, and the Fertile Crescent was a great grassland. And Palestine is adjacent to the Fertile Crescent, so it was pretty early to get civilization.
So what we're trying to say is, if you're playing Settlers of Catan on a world map, you want your first settlement to be on the Fertile Crescent. That's what we're saying.
You should actually just play Settlers of Canaan instead. There is a version of that board game called Settlers of Canaan.
No, there's not.
Yeah, there is. Yep.
Mm-hmm. We're going to take a quick break, but don't go anywhere. We're coming right back. I promise.
So what are some misconceptions? I'm curious what people know about it. And
I've got a list of some pretty common misconceptions going. And it's funny, I wasn't aware of any of these misconceptions. It's funny how many people are confused about this issue. Apparently, a big misconception is that Europe created Israel to apologize for the Holocaust, which is, I feel like this is almost an offensive thing to suggest. Because it totally discounts the fact that it totally discounts all the ancient history of Israel.
So I think it's mostly not true. However, I can see why people would definitely think it. So it's not true in the sense that the British Mandate of Palestine severely restricted immigration of Jews to the region. So the British kind of actively tried to actually prevent the Jews from moving to Palestine. So it's not true from the standpoint of the Jewish settlers who arrived. Because here is one thing that is true. There weren't very many Jewish people living in Palestine, in the region, as of 150 years ago. So they almost all arrived within, 150 to 50 years ago, basically. And mostly from Europe, some from Americas, a lot from Russia. So from various places, other parts of the Ottoman Empire, largely from other places in the Middle East, because there were a lot of Jews in the Ottoman Empire, and they enjoyed a special status, just as Christians did. But they could, in fact, like the Ottoman Empire was one of the best place for Jews to be, because there was a lot of persecution in Europe, and they were fairly well protected in the Ottoman Empire and could be engaged in trade and things like that. So moved from different parts of the Ottoman Empire. So it's not true that, like, in terms of the settlement of Israelis, in terms of Jewish settlers, I think, if anything, the British tried to actually restrict immigration. The foundation of Israel in 1948 was sort of reliant on U.S. support a little bit. The U.S. did provide the arms that they used mostly. I mean, throughout the Cold War, Israel was an ally of the United States, and Syria and Egypt, which were the main enemies of Israel through a series of wars, about six different wars, were client states of the Soviet Union, basically. So they were supplied with weapons, tanks, and airplanes by the Soviet Union, whereas Israel was supplied by the United States and the French, actually, too, French equipment. So it's hard to say that some of that support didn't come from, you know, the Holocaust and things like that. I think that is sort of true, actually. Like, Harry Truman was convinced by a number of Zionists to support Israel partly on that basis. So there is some basis, I think, of support for Israel coming from...
But they didn't create Israel.
...guilt of the Holocaust. Right, that is true. So the Israelis basically created Israel themselves. There was just a mass of settlers coming in, and then they kind of... So what happened was there was a mandate of Palestine controlled by the British, and there were a lot of Muslims living there, the original basically inhabitant, not the original, but, you know, the people who were living there at the time. There was a massive influx of Jewish settlers coming in throughout the 1930s, 1940s, and there was conflict between them. And there was conflict.
You're talking about back into Israel at this point in the Palestine.
Yeah. Well, before Israel, it's the Mandate of Palestine. So the political entity is the Mandate of Palestine, which is controlled by Britain. And there's Jewish settlers coming in. The British tried to restrict Jewish settlement because it's causing sort of internal problems between the people who are living there and the Jews coming in. And basically, there was like an uprising of the Muslim Palestinians in the 1930s against the British. And then there was one by the Jewish inhabitants of Palestine in the 1940s. So both sides, the Muslims and the Jews, were basically attacking the British. And the British didn't want anything to do with this, right? So they're like, we just wanted to get the F out of here. They tried to, like, mediate disputes on both sides, but neither side was happy with what the British were proposing. The British were kind of like the police force, basically. Neither side wanted the British to be there, but the British kind of didn't want to be there either, and they're just, like, stuck with this situation. And there was a couple of events where British soldiers were attacked by both sides, basically. And so they just declared unilaterally that we're leaving. And they said, we're leaving in March 1948. They said that in late 1947. And they just said, we're getting the F out of here. And then at that time, they turned it over to the United Nations.
Direct
which
quote.
Was a new organization created at the end of World War II to mediate the dispute. Yeah. And the United Nations sent a Swedish emissary to investigate the situation, Bernadotte. And he was assassinated. So the United Nations basically sent these people to figure out what should be done when the British leave. And the United Nations came up with the idea of partitioning. So they basically set a boundary that one side would occupy and the other side would occupy. So they came up with effectively what people think today is the right answer, which is a two-state solution. So they said, we're going to divide the land in half and give half to these people and half to these people.
They drew the map really strangely, though.
In 1948, when the British left, Palestine was basically invaded by three countries, or the region of Palestine was basically invaded by three countries, plus Palestinians themselves, Syria, Egypt, and Jordan, Transjordan at the time. who wanted to come in and claim some territory and help their faction win, but they lost very badly. They were like completely, their military forces were completely routed by the Israelis, who occupied a lot more land than they'd been granted by the UN. So the Israelis were in a situation where these surrounding Arabic countries tried to like prevent Israel from forming, basically, but Israel won the war very, very handily. And so carved
out, and they got some more land in the process, right?
Yeah, they took a lot more land than was theoretically allocated to them by the UN.
They conquered Egypt and then gave it back to Egypt.
Pardon me?
That if I remember correctly, they conquered Egypt and then gave Egypt back to Egypt.
No. That's I mean, what you're talking about is the Sinai, probably. So there's Sinai Peninsula, which is a region of
Egypt. That's it. Yeah, okay. So that was later.
Yeah, so they did. And then basically in a series of subsequent wars, in 1967, the Six Days War, and then 1973, the Yom Kippur War, they kept coming to try to like reclaim the territory they'd lost. And
the Palestinians
their motivation
or the Israelis?
Wasn't really to help the Palestinians exactly in all cases. I mean, there was a little bit of that, but I mean, like in the 1967 war, Jordan, it was in 1948, actually Jordan annexed the West Bank. So Jordan wanted to claim all the Palestinian territory for itself, basically. But anyway, in a series of war, they tried to reclaim the territory they lost and they kept getting beaten by Israel, basically.
Right.
So Israel gained more and more territory every time, pretty much. And so the problem became worse and worse as Israel occupied more territory, but Israel felt like in order to survive being surrounded by enemies that it needed to, you know, maintain like an aggressive posture and stuff like that. So
going back to the British occupied Palestine Israeli region, that whole period of time, the boundaries of land that they drew were really strange. If you look at those maps, it was like there was no one clear line that divided like one half into another half. It was just like sprinkled pockets of Israeli occupation and sprinkled pockets of Palestinian occupation. And I wonder if that had anything to do with the conflict, because it's like not a clear line.
Yeah.
And it's just
certainly,
like all over the place. It's almost like these different pockets are totally separate countries, not a unified area.
Yeah, this is the like basically the formation in 1948, actually.
That's it, yeah.
Yeah, and in the UN resolution, it's not like a clear, it's not like you can split the map in half, right? It's really complicated because there's people living kind of all over the place. And so there's not one clear line you can draw. I mean, they drew, I think, sort of similar to the current like West Bank, which is basically the bulk of Palestine today. And the Gaza Strip was not, it was like part of Egypt, basically occupied by Egypt. But but it was larger and it's really messy, right? I mean, because there's some people on either side of the line, no matter where you draw the line, basically. This is a huge problem in Europe, like was a huge problem between the wars. I mean, this is kind of what gave Hitler a bit of legitimacy in claiming the Sudetenland, because there were like Germans living on the other side of the line, you know, in Czechoslovakia.
Mm-hmm.
So that allowed him to like press these claims against Czechoslovakia. And same thing with like Poland, and press these claims against Poland because, like, hey, you have like Germans living in Poland, so hey, we demand this territory, right? And so it's always complicated when you're trying to draw lines on a map. And people live on both sides of the line, no matter how you draw the line, right? So it's tough. And so emotions obviously are pretty powerful there. And it creates a lot of disputed territory, and it's unclear. And still today, there's a lot of territory that's disputed. Like one particularly controversial thing is like settlement, Jewish or Israeli settlement in the West Bank, meaning the areas that are theoretically allocated to Palestine, there's a lot of like settlers who go in, right? Jewish settlers who go in, like build houses in territory that theoretically is part of the Palestine, right? Like, what do you do about that? Because there are people living there, right? And it's really tough. So, a lot of disputed territory.
Another one of the biggest misconceptions about this conflict is that it's too complicated to understand unless you're there participating in it. And I think that that's a really sad perspective to take because, first of all, don't be lazy. Educate yourselves. Take some time to... I love that we're accusing the viewers of having this misconception already, but it's a popular one, apparently.
Yeah.
But it's really not that complicated. It's really just about, I mean, I'm sure it is, there are nuances and it's complicated and things like this are always complicated, but it doesn't mean that you can't understand it.
Yeah.
And I think it really is just primarily about land and how that land is controlled and, you know, what people are allowed and not allowed to do there. And
yeah, I mean, it is about land, no question whatsoever. I mean, it's about religion in the sense that religion somewhat, but not entirely, creates the sides who are claiming the land. Right. So it's like teams, right? And or different tribes, right? And how do you define those tribes? Somewhat based on religion, somewhat based on nationalism. Like as I said, there are certainly Arabs and there are certainly Muslims who are Israeli citizens, right? But you know, it tends to be sort of based on religion. That's how you know the distinction is made, or culture, you could argue, maybe. But then
I'm still not buying that religion is the motivating force. I think it makes it, I think it complicates it,
but I don't think it's the motivating force. The teams to some extent, but it doesn't create the conflict necessarily. Like if it was exactly clear where the boundaries should be drawn, religion wouldn't necessarily have to create a conflict. But
see, I think if there was no religion, the conflict would still be there because it would be about who was there first and whose land it should.
I don't really dispute that. But how would the teams be defined? If there was no religion, how would you define the teams? Like, so the people who were there before, the people who arrived, where would the boundary be between those people if there was no dividing line of religion?
Well, I guess there's some social cohesion to it, I guess. Like, I mean, you read the Bible, the Old Testament is full of laws that weren't religious laws necessarily. A lot of them are religious laws, but I would say most of them are not religious laws. They're just about laws of being a Jewish person in that area. And those laws didn't really pertain to the people who lived in other tribes and villages and, you know, because those were the other people. So to me, it seems like the dividing line is, you know, what society you're a member of, and religion is like just an ancillary component of that.
But you say
to me, religion's like the mascot.
Society is heavily defined by religion in this case.
It is absolutely, and I'm not discounting
that
either.
It's not the only
factor,
certainly, and it's not. Yeah. I would, and I agree that it's not the point of dispute, which is territory. But
religion is the mascot.
But it sort of does create the teams, I think. Largely, at least.
It creates a base, creates a strong foundation for the teams.
Actually, this reminds me of something my brother said when I think he was like 4 years old or something like that, and all the adults in the room were really impressed. He said and he was like seeing something on the news, you know, about the conflict or whatever, and he said, if the Middle East is the Holy Land, why is it so warsome?
That's a great question. There's a lot of war happening in the Holy Land.
Yeah, right, exactly.
that's actually one of the scariest things about some of these religions is that they like,
but
the basis of them is that there's something that we're not seeing. There's a war going on that we're not seeing. It's like, that's the basis of Christianity and Judaism, basically, and Islam. Yeah. It's like, there's this supernatural war happening that we can't see. And our best option is to manifest that war as humans on Earth.
But even saying what I'm saying, which is religion creates the teams, doesn't mean like I'm saying one is right and one is wrong, or that there's even a solution to that. Like, what would you do about that?
You want everybody
and
to
I'm
be a Mormon?
I'm saying that even if religion did not exist, let's in some like weird imaginary world, it's quite possible that people would find something else to fight about. So I'm not saying that religion necessarily causes it, but I think it is a defining characteristic in this case of creating the teams. It's kind of tough because like there's people living there and like, you know, what gives you a right to claim certain territory and what doesn't give you a right to claim certain territory and stuff like that. Like, yeah.
Mm-hmm. But I think the distinction we're trying to make is that this conflict is not about Jews wanting Muslims to become Jews. It's about
that's definitely
Jews.
True. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not about conversion of religion. That's not what this conflict is. The conflict
is definitely not about conversion. I don't think anyone is like, I mean, maybe there's the odd person, but basically
it's about diversion.
Yeah, well, separation. I mean, basically, it is about territory, I think. Yeah, that's definitely true.
I guess we'll make this our last myth that we're going to try to dispel here, since we're getting a little long on this episode. The misconception that the U.S. could intervene in this conflict and end it.
Yeah, no, that's, I think that's definitely not true. I mean, the U.S. has acted as a mediator in a lot of cases, like in the Oslo Accords. I think Clinton was heavily involved in that, Bill Clinton. But yeah, so the U.S. has historically supported Israel, but not in everything. And U.S. public opinion has run both ways. This is one of the things about it. It's messy because it's not like one side versus the other side. In each side, there's some groups or people who are willing to compromise and, you know, compromise quite a lot. Like the PLO, actually, for example, Yasser Arafat basically wanted to create a state of Palestine along the current borders. So recognizing that, you know, Israel exists, Israel is a country, has right to exist, and we just want independence in kind of our area, right? But then there's other groups within the Palestinian areas, like the Gaza Strip and stuff, like Hamas, which is kind of basically a terrorist organization, who you know, don't want to compromise, right? And similarly, on the Israeli side, there's some groups who want a two-state solution, so basically let's divide the land. I mean, it's complicated and messy to divide the land, so a two-state solution is not easy. But I think over the years, over like 70 years of conflict, it seems to be, from an outside observer, pretty much the only way to solve this permanently is to have a two-state, is say, you guys have this land, you guys have this land, basically. And
yeah,
unfortunately, it's tough because there's people on both sides of the line, wherever you draw the line.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's hardliners on both sides, like the Israeli side, there's hardliners who don't want to compromise. And they kind of think, like, based on, I don't know, like, religion or God's promise, that they should have access to all the land, right? But there's people on the other side who think they should have access to all the land. So
I've got the perfect solution for this. They need a wall.
They have a wall, actually. And Trump actually often refers to the wall around Gaza as,
oh, that's true,
as being very effective. There are many, many walls, actually. And there's barbed wire and there's lots of checkpoints and military, you know, checkpoints and stuff like that. So, yeah.
Well, they need a bigger wall, and they need two buses to separate parents from children.
Yeah, right. Yeah. perfect. Walls are always the right answer.
Yeah, we just need more walls.
Yeah. So anyway, it's basically tough. There's, you know, and it's messy because there's different views on both sides.
It's, I guess, one thing that would be interesting to talk about in closing is what it is that could end this conflict. Because you say that people want, the Israeli people want, you know, their independence. The Palestinians want their independence. Both of these people want this land. They want their independence. But are they trying to get that independence from a third party, or are they just trying to dominate each other until there's just one group left standing?
It depends. Some people, you know, goes both ways. So some people would not want to compromise and would kind of want all of historical mandate Palestine. And some people on both sides would want to compromise and land for peace, basically. So,
yeah,
you know, give up some land in exchange for peace.
Which nation is responsible for giving Palestine their own land? Would it be Israel?
Well, yeah, to a large extent. I mean, there are, you know, Israel maintains occupation of parts of the West Bank. I don't think they occupy the Gaza Strip, but they certainly maintain, like, military checkpoints and stuff around, and the wall. There's a wall, as we said. So to some extent, yes. But the problem is, I think that Israel considers, you know, occupation sort of a bargaining chip, because there's a lot of people within Palestine and outside of Palestine, too. Like, Iran has declared that Israel should be wiped from the map, basically. They say all these kinds of, you know, statements, right? So there's a lot of states even today, or some states today, that don't recognize the existence of Israel still, right? So it's tough because I think Israel feels, you know, somewhat threatened, and they maintain occupation as a kind of a negotiation card and don't want to give that up, right? So, because I guess maybe they feel like if they kind of gave up everything, then they wouldn't have any position to negotiate on and they would be in a worse position, right? So
it doesn't seem like Israel has much incentive to give Palestine their land. And I'm not saying, I'm not making that, I'm not making that argument personally. I'm just saying that they've made so many efforts and they've been successful in claiming even more territory than they had before. So it would be very uncharacteristic of Israel to just like all of a sudden give Palestine this land.
That's what I'm arguing. Not from a moral standpoint. I'm not arguing, you know, I'm not actually judging that at all, but I'm saying from like a logical standpoint, Israel's actions make sense from their point of view, right?
It doesn't seem like they're giving up is what we're saying, I guess.
Right. So it's, that's what makes it tough. But I mean, they did give up something in the Oslo Accords. And like they negotiated with Egypt and gave up the Sinai Peninsula. So in exchange, basically with Egypt, they had a long-standing, they're basically in a constant state of war for 30 years with Egypt, basically. But they signed a peace treaty that established what has been pretty permanent peace with Egypt in exchange for returning the Sinai Peninsula. So, I mean, you know, they have shown willingness to negotiate with Arab countries in exchange for peace and things like and recognition. So it's not impossible, but it's tough. And that's also probably an easier case where it's negotiating with a foreign country rather than negotiating with a semi-occupied status.
Right. Well, that was a fascinating conversation. I enjoyed chatting about this conflict with you.
Yeah. Well, hopefully we didn't offend anyone on either side. If you have strong views on this, apologies if we got anything wrong. But again, not trying to take sides, just trying to shed some light on the kind of root causes of this conflict that still is pretty important in the world today.
Yep. Yep. Well, thank you guys so much for listening. This has been Two Damn White Guys on a very serious conflict in Israel and Palestine. That's not really what we're calling this episode, but that's what it was. If you want to help us out, you can leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. Those are so helpful. You can also follow us on Twitter. I'm at Julian Was Here. Andrew is at Mars Raider. And we do these episodes every Monday. We hope to have you back next week.
Thanks for listening.